2. Hell is cold. Between two worlds, life hovers like a star, twixt night and morn upon the horizon's verge. How little do we know that which we are, how less what we may be. Lord Byron, Don Juan.
You stupid little girl, Mrs. Black spat as she jerked tight the knots holding Tessa's wrists to her bed frame. What did you think you were going to accomplish running away like that? Where did you think you could possibly go?
Tessa said nothing, simply set her chin and looked toward the wall. She refused to let Mrs. Black or her horrible sister see how close she was to tears, or how much the ropes binding her ankles and wrists to the bed hurt.
She is entirely insensible of the honor being done to her, said Mrs. Dark, who was standing by the door as if to make sure Tessa didn't rip free of her bonds and rush out through it. It is disgusting to behold.
We have done what we can for her to make her ready for the Magister, Mrs. Black said and sighed. A pity we had such dull clay to work with, despite her talent. She is a deceitful little fool.
Indeed, agreed her sister.
She does realize, doesn't she, what will happen to her brother if she tries to disobey us again? We might be willing to be lenient this time, but the next...
She hissed through her teeth, a sound that made the hairs rise up on the back of Tessa's neck.
Nathaniel will not be so fortunate.
Tessa couldn't stand it any more, even knowing she shouldn't speak, shouldn't give them the satisfaction. She couldn't hold the words back. If you told me who the Magister was or what he wants with me...
He wants to marry you, you little fool.
Mrs. Black, finished with the knots, stepped back to admire her handiwork.
He wants to give you everything.
But why? Tessa whispered. Why me?
Because of your talent, Mrs. Dark said. Because of what you are and what you can do, what we trained you to do, you should be grateful to us.
But my brother, tears burned behind Tessa's eyes. I will not cry, I will not cry, I will not cry, she told herself. You told me that if I did everything you said, you'd let him go.
Once you marry the Magister, he'll give you whatever you want. If that's your brother, he'll give it to you.
There was no remorse or emotion in Mrs. Black's voice. Mrs. Dark chuckled.
I know what she's thinking. She's thinking that if she could have whatever she wanted, she'd have us killed.
Don't waste your energy even imagining the possibility, Mrs. Black chucked Tessa under the chin.
We have an ironclad contract with the Magister. He can never harm us, nor would he want to. He owes us everything for giving him you.
She leaned in closer, dropping her voice to a whisper.
He wants you healthy and intact. If he didn't, I'd have you beaten bloody. If you dare disobey us again, I'll defy his wishes and have you whipped until your skin peels off. Do you understand?
Tessa turned her face to the wall. There had been a night on the main as they'd passed Newfoundland when Tessa had not been able to sleep. She had gone out on the deck to get a breath of air and had seen the night sea ablaze with white glittering mountains. Icebergs, one of the sailors had told her as he'd passed, broken loose from the ice sheets of the north by the warmer weather. They had drifted slowly on the dark water, like the towers of a drowned white city. Tessa had thought that she'd never seen such a lonely sight. She had only begun to imagine loneliness, she knew now. Once the sisters left, Tessa discovered she no longer felt like she wanted to cry. The pressure at the backs of her eyes was gone, replaced by a dull feeling of hollow despair. Mrs. Dark had been right. If Tessa could have killed them both, she would have. She pulled experimentally at the ropes tying her legs and arms to the bedposts. They didn't budge. The knots were tight, tight enough to dig into her flesh and make her hands and feet tingle and shiver with pins and needles. She had a few minutes, she estimated, before her extremities went dead entirely. Part of her, and not a small part, wanted to stop struggling, to lie there limply until the magister came to take her away. The sky was already darkening outside the small window. It couldn't be much longer now. Perhaps he really did want to marry her. Perhaps he truly wanted to give her everything. Suddenly she heard Aunt Harriet's voice in her head. When you find a man you wish to marry, Tessa, remember this. You will know what kind of man he is not by the things he says, but by the things he does. Aunt Harriet had been right, of course. No man she would ever want to marry would have arranged to have her treated like a prisoner and a slave, imprisoned her brother, and had her tortured in the name of her talent. It was a travesty and a joke. Heaven only knew what the magister wanted to do with her once he had his hands on her. If it was something she could survive, she imagined she would soon enough wish she hadn't. God, what a useless talent she had! The power to change her appearance? If only she had the power to set things on fire, or shatter metal, or cause knives to grow out of her fingers. Or if she only had the power to make herself invisible, or shrink herself to the size of a mouse. She went suddenly still, so still that she could hear the ticking of the clockwork angel against her chest. She didn't have to shrink herself down to the size of a mouse, did she? All she had to do was make herself small enough that the ties around her wrists would be loose. It was possible for her to change into someone a second time, without touching something that had belonged to them, as long as she'd done it before. The sisters had made her memorize how to do it. For the first time, she was glad of something they'd forced her to learn. She pressed herself back against the hard mattress and made herself remember. The street, the kitchen, the movement of the needle, the glow of the gaslight. She willed it on, willed the change to come. What's your name?
Emma. Emma Bayliss.
The change bore down on her like a train, almost knocking the breath out of her, reshaping her skin, reforming her bones. She choked back her screams and arched her back. And it was done. Blinking, Tessa stared up at the ceiling, then glanced sideways, staring at her wrist, at the rope around it. There were her hands, Emma's hands, thin and frail, the circle of the rope loose around her small wrists. Triumphantly, Tessa jerked her hands free and sat up, rubbing at the red marks where the rope had burned her skin. Her ankles were still tied. She leaned forward, her fingers working quickly at the knots. Mrs. Black, it turned out, could tie knots like a sailor. Tessa's fingers were bloodied and sore by the time the rope fell away and she sprang to her feet. Emma's hair was so thin and fine that it had slipped free of the clips holding Tessa's own hair back. Tessa pushed her hair back impatiently over her shoulders and shook herself free of Emma, letting the change wash away from her until her hair slid through her fingers, thick and familiar to the touch. Glancing at the mirror across the room, she saw that little Emma Bayliss was gone and she was herself again. A noise behind her made her whirl. The knob of the bedroom door was turning, twisting back and forth as if the person on the other side was having difficulty getting it open. Mrs. Dark, she thought. The woman was back, to whip her until she was bloody, back to take her to the magister. Tessa hurried across the room, seized the porcelain jug from the washstand, and then scuttled to the side of the door, the jug gripped hard in her whitened fist. The knob turned. The door opened. In the dimness, all Tessa could see was shadows as someone stepped into the room. She lunged forward, swinging the jug with all her strength. The shadowy figure moved as quick as a whip, but not quite quick enough. The jug slammed into the figure's outstretched arm before flying from Tessa's grasp to crash into the far wall. Broken crockery rained down onto the floor as the stranger yelled. The yell was undeniably a masculine one. So was the flood of cursing that followed. She backed away, then dashed for the door, but it had slammed shut, and tug as she would on the knob, it wouldn't budge. Bright light blazed through the room as if the sun had risen. Tessa spun, blinking away the tears in her eyes, and stared. There was a boy standing in front of her. He couldn't have been much older than she was, 17 or possibly 18. He was dressed in what looked like workman's clothes, a frayed black jacket, trousers, and tough-looking boots. He wore no waistcoat, and thick leather straps crisscrossed his waist and chest. Attached to the straps were weapons, daggers and folding knives and things that looked like blades of ice. In his right hand, he held a sort of glowing stone. It was shining, providing the light in the room that had nearly blinded Tessa. His other hand, slim and long-fingered, was bleeding where she had gashed the back of it with her pitcher. But that wasn't what made her stare. He had the most beautiful face she had ever seen. Tangled black hair and eyes like blue glass. Elegant cheekbones, a full mouth, and long, thick lashes. Even the curve of his throat was perfect. He looked like every fictional hero she'd ever conjured up in her head. Although she'd never imagined one of them cursing at her while shaking his bleeding hand in an accusing fashion. He seemed to realize she was staring at him because the cursing stopped.
"You cut me," he said.
His voice was pleasant, British, very ordinary. He looked at his hand with critical interest.
"It might be fatal."
Tessa looked at him with wide eyes. "Are you the Magister?" He tilted his hand to the side. Blood ran down it, spattering the floor.
"Dear me, massive blood loss. Death could be imminent."
"Are you the Magister?"
"Magister?" He looked mildly surprised by her vehemence. "That means master in Latin, doesn't it?"
Tessa was feeling increasingly as if she were trapped in a strange dream.
"I suppose it does. I've mastered many things in my life. Navigating the streets of London, dancing the quadrille, the Japanese art of flower arranging, lying at charades, concealing a highly intoxicated state. Delighting young women with my charms?"
Tessa stared.
"Alas," he went on, "no one's ever actually referred to me as the master, or the magister either. More's the pity."
"Are you highly intoxicated at the moment?"
Tessa meant the question in all seriousness, but realized the moment the words were out of her mouth that she must have sounded awfully rude, or worse, flirtatious. He seemed too steady on his feet to really be drunk anyway. She'd seen Nate intoxicated enough times to know the difference.
Perhaps he was merely insane.
"How very direct. But I suppose all you Americans are, aren't you?"
The boy looked amused.
"Yes, your accent gives you away. What's your name, then?"
Tessa looked at him in disbelief.
"What's my name? Don't you know it? You've come bursting into my room, scared me nearly to death, and now you demand to know my name? What on earth's your name, and who are you anyway?"
"My name is Herondale," the boy said cheerfully. "William Herondale, but everyone calls me Will."
"Is this really your room?"
"Not very nice, is it?"
He wandered toward the window, pausing to examine the stacks of books on her bedside table, and then the bed itself. He waved a hand at the ropes.
"Do you often sleep tied to the bed?"
Tessa felt her cheeks flame and was amazed, under the circumstances, that she still had the capacity to be embarrassed. Should she tell him the truth? Was it at all possible that he was the Magister? Though anyone who looked like that wouldn't need to tie girls up and imprison them in order to get them to marry him. "Here, hold this." He handed her the glowing stone. Tessa took it, half expecting it to burn her fingers, but it was cool to the touch. The moment it struck her palm, its light dimmed to a shimmering flicker. She looked toward him in dismay, but he had made his way to the window and was looking out, seemingly unconcerned.
"Pity we're on the third floor. I could manage the jump, but it would probably kill you. No, we must go through the door and take our chances in the house."
"Go through the... what?" Tessa, feeling mired in a semi-permanent state of confusion, shook her head. "I don't understand."
"How can you not understand?"
He pointed at her books.
"You read novels.
Obviously, I'm here to rescue you.
Don't I look like Sir Galahad?"
He raised his arms dramatically.
"My strength is as the strength of 10, because my heart is pure."
Something echoed far away inside the house, the sound of a door slamming. Will said a word Sir Galahad would never have said, and sprang away from the window. He landed with a wince and glanced ruefully down at his injured hand.
"I'll need to take care of this later.
Come along." He looked at her pointedly, a question in his eyes.
"Miss Gray," she said faintly, "Miss Teresa Gray."
"Miss Gray,"
he repeated. "Come along then, Miss Gray." He sprang past her, moved toward the door, found the knob, turned it, yanked. Nothing happened.
"It won't work,"
she said. "The door cannot be opened from the inside." Will grinned ferociously.
"Can't it?"
He reached for his belt, for one of the objects that hung on it. He chose what looked like a long, slender twig, picked clean of smaller branches and made of a whitish-silver material. He placed the end of it against the door and drew. Thick black lines spiraled out from the tip of the flexible cylinder, making an audible hissing noise as they spread across the wooden surface like a directed spill of ink.
"You're drawing?" Tessa demanded. "I don't really see how that can possibly..."
There was a noise like cracking glass. The doorknob, untouched, spun, fast, then faster, and the door sprang open, a faint puff of smoke rising from the hinges.
"Now you do,"
Will said, and pocketing the strange object, gestured for Tessa to follow him.
"Let's go."
Inexplicably, she hesitated, looking back toward the room that had been her prison for nearly 2 months.
"My books."
"I'll get you more books." He urged her into the corridor ahead of him and pulled the door shut behind them. After catching hold of her wrist, he drew her down the hallway and around a corner. Here were the stairs that she had descended so many times with Miranda. Will took them two at a time, pulling her after him. From above them, Tessa heard a scream. It was unmistakably Mrs. Dark's.
"They've found you missing," Will said.
They had reached the first landing, and Tessa slowed her pace, only to be jerked ahead by Will, who seemed disinclined to stop.
"Aren't we going out the front door?" she demanded.
"We can't. The building's surrounded. There's a line of carriages pulled up out front. I appear to have arrived at an unexpectedly exciting time."
He started down the stairs again, and Tessa followed.
"Do you know what the Dark Sisters had planned for this evening?"
"No."
"But you were expecting someone called the Magister?"
They were in the cellar now, where the plaster walls gave way suddenly to damp stone. Without Miranda's lantern, it was quite dark. Heat rose to meet them like a wave.
"By the angel, it's like the ninth circle of hell down here."
"The ninth circle of hell is cold," Tessa said automatically. Will stared at her.
"What?"
"In the inferno," she told him. "Hell is cold. It's covered in ice." He stared at her for another long moment,
the corners of his mouth twitching, then held out his hand. "Give me the witchlight."
At her blank expression, he made an impatient noise.
"The stone! Give me the stone!"
The moment his hand closed about the stone, light blazed up from it again, raying out through his fingers. For the first time, Tessa saw that he had a design on the back of his hand, drawn there as if in black ink. It looked like an open eye.
"As for the temperature of hell, Miss Gray," he said, "let me give you a piece of advice. The handsome young fellow who's trying to rescue you from a hideous fate is never wrong, not even if he says the sky is purple and made of hedgehogs."
He really is mad, Tessa thought, but didn't say so. She was too alarmed by the fact that he had started toward the wide double doors of the Dark Sister's chambers.
"No," she caught at his arm, pulling him back. "Not that way. There's no way out. It's a dead end."
"Correcting me again, I see."
Will turned and strode the other way toward the shadowy corridor Tessa had always feared. Swallowing hard, she followed him. The corridor narrowed as they went along it, the walls pressing in on either side. The heat was even more intense here, making Tessa's hair spring into curls and paste itself to her temples and neck. The air felt thick and was hard to breathe. For a while they walked in silence, until Tessa could stand it no longer. She had to ask, even though she knew the answer would be no.
"Mr. Herondale," she said, "did my brother send you to find me?"
She half feared he'd make some mad comment in response, but he simply looked at her curiously.
"Never heard of your brother," he said, and she felt the dull ache of disappointment gnaw at her heart. She'd known Nate couldn't have sent him. He'd have known her name then, wouldn't he? But it still hurt.
"And outside of the past 10 minutes, Miss Gray, I'd never heard of you either. I've been following the trail of a dead girl for near on 2 months. She was murdered, left in an alley to bleed to death. She'd been running from something."
The corridor had reached a forking point, and after a pause, Will headed to the left.
"There was a dagger beside her, covered in her blood. It had a symbol on it, two snakes swallowing each other's tails."
Tessa felt a jolt. Left in an alley to bleed to death? There was a dagger beside her? Surely the body had been Emma's.
"That's the same symbol that's on the side of the Dark Sister's carriage. That's what I call them. Mrs. Dark and Mrs. Black, I mean."
"You're not the only one who calls them that. The other downworlders do the same," said Will.
"I discovered that fact while investigating the symbol. I must have carried that knife through 100 downworld haunts searching for someone who might recognize it. I offered a reward for information. Eventually the name of the Dark Sisters came to my ears."
"Downworld?" Tessa echoed, puzzled. "Is that a place in London?"
"Never mind that," said Will. "I'm boasting of my investigative skills, and I would prefer to do it without interruption. Where was I?"
"The dagger," Tessa broke off as a voice echoed down the corridor, high and sweet and unmistakable.
"Miss Gray,"
Mrs. Dark's voice. It seemed to drift between the walls like coiling smoke.
"Oh, Miss Gray, where are you?"
Tessa froze.
"Oh, God, they've caught up with—"
Will seized her wrist again, and they were off running, the witchlight in his other hand throwing a wild pattern of shadows and light against the stone walls as they hurtled down the twisting corridor. The floor sloped down, the stones underfoot growing gradually more slick and damp as the air around them grew hotter and hotter. It was as if they were racing down into hell itself, as the voices of the Dark Sisters echoed off the walls.
"Miss Gray, we shan't let you run, you know. We shan't let you hide. We'll find you, Poppet, you know we will."
Will and Tessa careened around a corner and came up short. The corridor ended at a pair of high metal doors.
Releasing Tessa, Will flung himself against them. They burst open and he tumbled inside, followed by Tessa, who spun to slam them shut behind her. The weight of them was almost too much for her to manage, and she had to throw her back against them to force them, finally, closed. The only illumination in the room was Will's glowing stone. Its light sunk down now to an ember between his fingers. It lit him in the darkness like limelight on a stage as he reached around her to slam the bolt home on the door. The bolt was heavy and flaking with rust, and standing as close to him as she was, she could feel the tension in his body as he dragged it home and let it fall into place. Miss Gray? He was leaning against her, her back against the closed doors. She could feel the driving rhythm of his heart. Or was it her heart? The odd white illumination cast by the stone shimmered against the sharp angle of his cheeks, the faint sheen of sweat on his collarbones. There were marks there, too, she saw, rising from the unbuttoned collar of his shirt, like the mark on his hand, thick and black, as if someone had inked designs onto his skin. "Where are we?" she whispered. "Are we safe?" Without answering, he drew away, raising his right hand. As he lifted it, the light blazed up higher, illuminating the room. They were in a sort of cell, though it was very large. The walls, floor, and ceiling were stone, sloping down to a large drain in the middle of the floor. There was only one window, very high up in the wall. There were no doors, save the ones they had come through, but none of that was what made Tessa draw in her breath. The place was a slaughterhouse. There were long wooden tables running the length of the room. Bodies lay on one of them, human bodies, stripped and pale. Each had a black incision in the shape of a Y marking its chest, and each head dangled back over the edge of the table, the hair of the women sweeping the floor like brooms. On the center table were piles of blood-stained knives and machinery, copper cogs and brass gears and sharp-toothed silver hacksaws. Tessa crammed a hand into her mouth, stifling a scream. She tasted blood as she bit down on her own fingers. Will didn't seem to notice. He was white-faced as he looked around, mouthing something under his breath that Tessa couldn't make out. There was a crashing noise and the metal doors shuddered, as if something heavy had flung itself against them. Tessa lowered her bleeding hand and cried out, "Mr. Herondale?" He turned as the doors shuddered again. A voice echoed from the other side of them.
"Miss Gray, come out now and we won't hurt you."
"They're lying," Tessa said quickly. "Oh, do you really think so?" Having packed as much sarcasm into the question as was humanly possible, Will pocketed his glowing witch light and leapt onto the center table, the one covered in bloodied machinery. He bent down and caught up a heavy-looking brass cog and weighed it in his hand. With a grunt of effort, he hurled it toward the high window. The glass shattered, and Will raised his voice.
"Henry, some assistance, please. Henry."
"Who's Henry?" Tessa demanded, but at that moment the doors shuttered a third time, and thin cracks appeared in the metal. Clearly, they weren't going to hold much longer. Tessa dashed to the table and seized a weapon, almost at random. This one was a ragged-toothed metal hacksaw, the kind butchers used to cut through bone. She whirled around, clutching it, as the doors burst open. The Dark Sisters stood in the doorway. Mrs. Dark, as tall and bony as a rake in her shining lime-green gown, and Mrs. Black, red-faced, her eyes narrowed to slits. A bright corona of blue sparks surrounded them like tiny fireworks. Their gazes slid over Will, who, still standing on the table, had drawn one of his icy blades from his belt and came to rest on Tessa. Mrs. Black's mouth, a red slash in her pale face, stretched into a grin.
"Little Miss Gray," she said, "you ought to know better than to run. We told you what would happen if you ran again."
"Then do it, whip me, bloody, kill me, I don't care,"
Tessa shouted, and was gratified to see that the Dark Sisters looked at least a little taken aback by her outburst. She'd been too terrified to raise her voice to them before.
I won't let you give me to the Magister. I'd rather die.
What an unexpectedly sharp tongue you have, Miss Gray, my dear, said Mrs. Black.
With great deliberation, she reached to draw the glove from her right hand, and for the first time Tessa saw her bare hand. The skin was gray and thick, like an elephant's hide, her nails long dark talons. They looked as sharp as knives. Mrs. Black gave Tessa a fixed grin.
Perhaps if we cut it out of your head, you'd learn to mind your manners.
She moved toward Tessa and was blocked by Will, leaping down from the table to put himself between them.
Malik,
he said, and his ice-white blade blazed up like a star.
Get out of my way, little Nephilim warrior, said Mrs. Black, and take your seraph blades with you. This is not your battle.
You're wrong about that, Will narrowed his eyes. I've heard some things about you, m'lady. Whispers that run through Downworld like a river of black poison. I've been told you and your sister will pay handsomely for the bodies of dead humans, and you don't mind much how they get that way.
Such a fuss over a few mundanes, Mrs. Dark chuckled and moved to stand beside her sister so that Will, with his blazing sword, was between Tessa and both ladies. We have no quarrel with you, Shadow Hunter, unless you choose to pick one. You have invaded our territory and broken Covenant law in doing so. We could report you to the Clave.
While the Clave disapproves of trespassers, oddly, they take an even darker view of beheading and skinning people. They're peculiar that way, Will said.
People? Mrs. Dark spat. Mundanes? You care no more about them than we do.
She looked toward Tessa then.
Has he told you what he really is? He isn't human.
You're one to talk, Tessa said in a trembling voice.
And has she told you what she is? Mrs. Black demanded of Will. About her talent, what she can do?
If I were to venture a guess, Will replied, I would say it has something to do with the Magister. Mrs. Dark looked suspicious.
You know of the Magister?
She glanced at Tessa.
I see. Only what she has told you. The Magister, little boy angel, is more dangerous than you could ever imagine. And he has waited a long time for someone with Tessa's ability. You might even say he is the one who caused her to be born.
Her words were swallowed up in a colossal crash as the whole east wall of the room suddenly caved in. It was like the walls of Jericho tumbling down in Tessa's old Bible stories picture book. One moment the wall was there, and the next it wasn't. There was a huge, gaping rectangular hole instead, steaming with choking swirls of plaster dust. Mrs. Dark gave a thin scream and seized her skirts with her bony hands. Clearly, she hadn't expected the wall to collapse any more than Tessa had. Will caught hold of Tessa's hand and pulled her toward him, blocking her with his body as chunks of stone and plaster rained down on them. As his arms went around her, she could hear Mrs. Black screaming. Tessa twisted in Will's grip, trying to see what was happening. Mrs. Dark stood, pointing with one gloved, trembling finger toward the dark hole in the wall. The dust was beginning to settle, barely. Enough so that the figures moving toward them through the wreckage slowly began to take shape. The shadowy outlines of two human figures became visible. Each was holding a blade, and each blade shone with the same blue-white light as Will's. Angels, Tessa thought, wondering, but she didn't say it. That light, so bright. What else could they be? Mrs. Black gave a screech and lunged forward. She threw her hands out, and sparks shot from them like exploding fireworks. Tessa heard someone yell, a very human yell, and Will, releasing Tessa, spun and flung his bright-burning sword at Mrs. Black. It whipped through the air, end over end, and drove into her chest. Screaming and twisting, she staggered backward and fell, crashing down onto one of the horrible tables, which collapsed in a mess of blood and splintering wood. Will grinned. It wasn't a pleasant sort of grin. He turned to look at Tessa then. For a moment they stared at each other, silently, across the space that separated them. And then his other companions flooded in around him, two men in close-fitting dark coats, brandishing shining weapons and moving so fast that Tessa's vision blurred. Tessa backed toward the far wall, trying to avoid the chaos in the center of the room, where Mrs. Dark, howling imprecations, was holding off her attackers with the burning sparks of energy that flew from her hands like fiery rain. Mrs. Black was writhing on the floor, sheets of black smoke rising from her body as if she were burning from the inside out. Tessa moved toward the open door that led to the corridor, and strong hands seized her and yanked her backward. Tessa shrieked and twisted, but the hands circling her upper arms were as strong as iron. She turned her head to the side and sank her teeth into the hand gripping her left arm. Someone yelled and let go of her. Spinning, she saw a tall man with a shock of untidy ginger hair staring at her with a reproachful expression, his bleeding left hand cradled against his chest.
"Will!" he shouted. "Will! She bit me!"
"Did she, Henry?"
Will, looking amused as usual, appeared like a summoned spirit from the chaos of smoke and flames. Behind him, Tessa could see the second of his companions, a muscular, brown-haired young man holding a struggling Mrs. Dark. Mrs. Black was a dark, humped shape on the ground. Will raised an eyebrow in Tessa's direction.
"It's bad form to bite," he informed her. "Rude, you know. Hasn't anyone ever told you that?"
"It's also rude to go about grabbing at ladies you haven't been introduced to," Tessa said stiffly. "Hasn't anyone told you that?" The ginger-haired man whom Will had called Henry shook his bleeding hand with a rueful smile. He had a nice sort of face, Tessa thought. She almost felt guilty for having bitten him.
"Will, look out!"
the brown-haired man shouted. Will spun as something flew through the air, narrowly missed Henry's head, and crashed into the wall behind Tessa. It was a large brass cog, and it hit the wall with such force that it stuck there like a marble wedged into a bit of pastry. Tessa whirled and saw Mrs. Black advancing toward them, her eyes burning like coal in her crumpled white face. Black licks of flame splayed up around the hilt of the sword that protruded from her chest. "Damn." Will reached for the hilt of another blade wedged through the belt at his waist. "I thought we'd put that thing down." Baring her teeth, Mrs. Black lunged. Will leapt out of the way, but Henry wasn't quite as fast. She struck him and knocked him backward. Clinging on like a tick, she rode him to the ground, snarling, her claws sinking into his shoulders as he yelled. Will whirled, the blade now in his hand. Raising it, he shouted, "Uriel!" And it flared up suddenly in his grip like a blazing torch. Tessa fell back against the wall as he whipped the blade downward. Mrs. Black reared back, her claws out, reaching for him. And the blade sheared neatly through her throat. Completely severed, her head struck the ground, rolling and bumping, as Henry, yelling in disgust and soaked in blackish blood, shoved the remains of her body off him and scrambled to his feet. A terrible scream tore through the room.
"No!"
The cry had come from Mrs. Dark. The brown-haired man holding her let go with a sudden cry as blue fire shot from her hands and eyes. Yelling in pain, he fell to the side as she tore away from him and advanced on Will and Tessa, Mrs. Dark's eyes flaming like black torches. She was hissing words in a language that Tessa had never heard. It sounded like crackling flames. Raising a hand, the woman flung what looked like a bolt of lightning toward Tessa. With a cry, Will sprang in front of her, his glowing blade extended. The lightning ricocheted off the blade and struck one of the stone walls, which glowed with a sudden strange light.
"Henry!" Will shouted without turning. "If you could remove Miss Gray to a place of safety soon!"
Henry's bitten hand came down on Tessa's shoulder as Mrs. Dark flung another sheet of lightning toward her.
"Why is she trying to kill me?" Tessa thought dizzily. "Why not Will?"
And then, as Henry pulled her toward him, more light sheared off Will's blade, refracting into a dozen blazing shards of brightness. For a moment, Tessa stared, caught by the unlikely beauty of it. And then she heard Henry shout, telling her to drop to the floor, but it was too late. One of the blazing shards had caught her shoulder with incredible force. It was like being struck by a hurtling train. She was knocked free of Henry's grasp, lifted and flung backward. Her head struck the wall with blinding force. She was conscious only briefly of Mrs. Dark's high screeching laughter before the world went away.